Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Awardner, and in this episode, well, this is the episode that nearly didn't get to you. This is during a pod a day in May where I've said that I'll publish a podcast every single day. The Sunday show will be unchanged, and yet it is a Sunday show during a pod a day in May that is where I hit my first potential hurdle. And it's because I've been feeling crappy over the last couple of days. I've been headachy, my jaw's been aching, I've had very little energy, no more. There haven't really been many Instagrams of me running the last couple of days in the morning going, yeah, I've done it. And the morning I recorded this episode, I could have easily woken up, cried off sick and gone back to bed. Genuinely, it has not been a strong week for the energetic version of Emma Gunn's. Ugh, third person reference, I apologise. But this episode is one I've been working on for a while because it's a topic that you, my most excellent listeners, have asked me to explore in detail in the show. It's a show all about hormones and very specifically about perimenopause and menopause. The reason it has taken a while to bring the show to you is that I've wanted to get the right guest and approach the subject in a way that's accessible and not hugely scientific and bamboozling, because it really can be. I did a lot of research on this and came out of it feeling a little bit none the wiser. But enter Dr. Elaine McQuaid, who brilliantly agreed to be on the show to answer all my and your questions and really simplify what goes on when our hormone levels begin to change and we head towards menopause. And perhaps ironically, when I arrived to see Elaine at the Marion Gluck Clinic in central London, I mentioned my headache, lethargy and other symptoms because I really did feel like you could just see it on my face. I felt puffy and just a bit like I was walking in going, oh, hi, Elaine, sorry. And as it turns out, after she asked me two questions, and it's all hormone related, which is why the codeine and caffeine wasn't helping a jot and why it was now in like day three of feeling rubbish. So there, I'd done my homework, learned my hormone terminology and was armed with a few bits of paper because I genuinely thought I need to keep track of all of this. I really need to scribble down notes. If there's mention of what happens at this time of the month and that time of the month, I need to keep some sort of a graph so that I can go back and ask the right questions and keep everything on track. But I hope it cheers you to know that while the biological stuff can get a bit sciencey, when it comes to the practical things you and I can do, that's actually the easier bit. It really is. I mean, I didn't need to draw any pictures or graphs or anything because really what goes on is one thing that can be identified and but then it can be worked on by you and your doctor or by you in other practical ways. And that's what's really empowering, I felt, about what Elaine was saying. Very early on in the show, she says, actually, some lifestyle changes can make a huge difference before you even go down the medical route. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I suspect this will be the first of many shows on this topic, as I know a lot of you have emailed me with questions and queries about what's happening to hormones and how it relates to other things like mood, hair, skin, and energy. But this episode is designed to go back to basics, ask the questions that help us, that's me and you, understand the basics and also the practical steps you and I can take in the here and now. So I hope you find this episode useful. Thank you to Elaine for joining me. And I would really like to hear from you, whether that's via email at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com or on DM on social media, where I am at Emma Gunns on Instagram and Twitter. One of the greatest places to chat to me and also other listeners to the show is the Facebook group. The link to join is in the show notes. There are two questions that you have to answer. If you don't answer those questions, I'm afraid I can't let you in. Answer those questions and you will have nigh on 3,000 fellow listeners who will be able to share and discuss with you on topics such as perimenopause, menopause, hormones, whatever it might be. Here it is. I really hope that you enjoy it and do get in touch if you have any thoughts, feelings, and don't forget to join that Facebook group. So here we are, perimenopause and everything that you need to know. And I hope you feel as cheered about it as I did. Right, Elaine. Elaine McQuaid is with me. Now, listeners, this is an episode I'm very excited about bringing to you because in the Facebook forum, on emails, I get a lot of questions about hormones and particularly perimenopause. Now, Elaine McQuaid joins me. You are Dr. Elaine McQuaid.
Hello.
Hi. And I've just said to you, could you, you know, for the purposes of this podcast, what's your title? And it was quite a lot that you were able to rattle off.
Well, I'm an ex-NHS GP. I've given that up over the last couple of years. Previously worked in hospital medicine back in Ireland and then trained in functional medicine and bioidentical hormones. And that's what I've been doing for the last 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. Lots of different trainings over the years that I've spent a fortune on and too much time. But yeah.
But the purposes of this episode is that you do specialise in bioidentical hormones and you are something, well, basically, you know what goes on in the female body month by month. Listeners, I'm not going to lie. One of the first things I did when I landed in the office was going, why do I always get a low-level headache migraine situation a few days before I come on? And Elaine just explained to me exactly what it is.
Well, I've been working in hormones the past couple of years, so hopefully I know something.
Yes. Now, let's just get into this. I even think understanding what happens during the monthly cycle can be bamboozling in and of itself. But when it comes to perimenopause, there's a lot of confusion. And I don't even know whether it's confusion or just lack of information out there. Is that something that you find and feel?
Yeah, I mean, most of the women who come to see me actually don't know an awful lot about their hormones. To make it really simple, the perimenopause starts usually when you turn 40, and that's when your hormones start to fluctuate and change. The biggest one in the perimenopause for me when I see women is progesterone. So estrogen tends to be maintained, starts to fluctuate a bit, but the biggest one is progesterone dropping, and you get what we call estrogen dominant picture, where women gain weight, they start to experience anxiety and sleep problems, and you get probably worsening PMT as well. So the progesterone tends to drop a lot more than the estrogen, so you get an imbalance of the hormones. So in the perimenopause, we tend to help women with that, with replacement of progesterone, and that usually is suffice until the periods stop, which would then be called the menopause, and that is when then we start to look at other different hormones like estrogen to replace, to help them with their symptoms. So there's a lot of confusion around perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause.
We're gonna clear it up. So it's not even the menopause isn't necessarily a process. The menopause is the menostop. Like once your period stops, that's it. It's actually the transition-y bit is perimenopause.
So the this is where the confusion comes in. The way I explain it to patients is that the perimenopause is when the hormones start to go erratic.
Right.
The menopause is when the hormones stop completely,
right,
and that's when people call the change, or you drop off the cliff edge, basically, and things go wrong, but things start prior to that. And then postmenopausal is really any time after that, and people talk about coming through the menopause, which is a bit of a myth, really, because you don't actually come through anything. You come through the dropping off the cliff edge, which is the hard part, but actually your hormones don't ever come back. So when people come and say, how long do I need to be on these, or basically the rest of your life is ideal if you can, because actually your hormones don't ever come back.
Okay, interesting. Right, and also just because we've talked about progesterone, what is the function of progesterone?
So progesterone's basically one of your sex hormones, works along with estrogen. It's sort of in a balance. It's your pregnancy hormone as well. It goes really high in pregnancy, and it's what we call it's a happy hormone. So it's mm-hmm. a lot. It has a big effect on your mood. It helps to balance your weight, so it sort of balances out the estrogen. Fluid retention effect, so it's a more of a diuretic. It helps your thyroid function. It's got a multitude of effects that aren't just related to the menstrual cycle, but it's your sort of hormone that's most associated with the PMT symptoms, so that week before your period mm-hmm. when women tend to feel no energy, mood, sleep goes off, and they get a bit depressed or anxious. That's the hormone effects of progesterone dropping prior to the period.
Oh, so that explains the last 5 days.
Yeah. So progesterone basically is there to maintain the lining of the womb in pregnancy, and obviously drops prior to your period whenever you don't conceive, so that mm-hmm. your body then has a bleed because a baby hasn't been conceived. So okay. It's part of the cycle.
And as we've done the explainer about progesterone, let's talk about estrogen and what estrogen does.
And again, estrogen has a lot of effects on mood. Estrogen is one of the other sex hormones, which is basically the hormone that most women know about. It helps your mood. It helps your brain function. It's most the drop in estrogen is the one where people get the brain fog and just not being able to think straight. It's also when it drops in the menopause, you get symptoms of hot flushes. So it helps maintain your temperature control. Mm. It's a big part of your metabolic rate as well. So when estrogen and progesterone drop in the menopause, women tend to gain weight because their metabolic rate slows down and their thyroid's affected as well. So again, these hormones aren't just about, which is what the medical profession are now recognising, that they're more than just sex hormones. Mm. So we don't just give women BHRT or HRT for their menopausal symptoms. There are actual long-term benefits for being on hormones longer term.
Mm. And what are the differences between bioidentical hormones and hormones? Are bioidentical hormones new in that are they a breakthrough moving on from the original form of HRT? That's my understanding from using the internet.
So bioidentical hormones have actually been around for years and years and years. There's a Dr. John Lee in the USA who's written lots of books on it. Marion Glick was one of the first UK doctors to bring it into the UK and started off in Australia. And they're basically hormones that are made identical to the human body's hormones. So the estrogen and the progesterone components are exactly the same molecular structure as your own body's. Mm-hmm. So you're replacing like for like, so you're not having any, you shouldn't have any side effects. Mm-hmm. All you're doing is topping up your own hormones that are missing. And the difference between those and HRT, which is what your GP can prescribe mm-hmm. or can be prescribed on the NHS, and I'll go back on this in a minute because doctors in the NHS can prescribe natural hormones as well. It's just not in the same bespoke way as they can in sort of specialist bioidentical hormone clinics. So most of the conventional HRTs or the older ones have natural estrogen in them, but they have an unnatural progesterone called progestogen or variations on that theme. Drug companies can't patent natural hormones, unfortunately, so they have to make them slightly different, but the slight difference has a massively different effect on the effects that it has on your body. So obviously the conventional HRT helps a lot of women with their symptoms, but it can come with side effects. So for some women it works really well, and obviously they feel better on it because their hot flushes stop, but it also can have side effects like weight gain and actual depression. So the progesterone that we would prescribe with bioidentical hormones has all the happy hormone effects. It makes you feel better and happier and sleep better and helps your mood and helps you lose weight. The unnatural progesterones tend to cause weight gain, depression, can affect your sleep, and can have lots of untoward effects. So there's a big movement towards obviously going towards natural, and everybody wants to be much more natural these days, and, yeah. and obviously this is just another way of looking at that.
Is it correct if one gets really bad PMT, for example, or gets really bad period cramps every month, is that a sign that, or is this a myth, that you're going to have a really horrible menopause?
I don't think there's massive links between the both, but it does show that you're probably a bit more hormonally driven. It is odd. I think I spoke to you earlier about how different the presentation is with each woman that comes to the clinic. You know, when some women, as you say, have go through their life without having any period problems, and then there's other women who are crippled with period pain the week before their period. So it probably does have a link. I've actually not done any research into that, but it's maybe something I'll start to ask. But, you know, I see women every day. Some women go through the menopause and they've very minimal symptoms. They may come with just a few hot flushes. Other women are completely crippled, can't leave the house with anxiety, mood and depression, and not sleeping, hot flushes. So the variation is... the only way I can explain it is that we're all differently equipped to deal with our hormones.
Which I guess means that if you are going to try and manage it, you have to have a detailed blood test, because you have to have a blood test that shows up your individual uniqueness. Because, and not just a cookie cutter test.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually funny. One of the patients came up with it one day, and it actually makes perfect sense that we should have our bloods tested in our 30s to give us an idea what our maximum is, because everybody's levels are different. You know, so in an ideal world, maybe we should look at that in the future, is that, you know, when we're in our prime, that we get a blood test done to see what our level of hormone is, so that we can aim for that when they come to the menopause. The reason we do bloods at the clinic is, firstly, we do a baseline, and mostly in the menopause, when your hormones have stopped, you'll not have any hormone showing. Occasionally you'll have a small amount of estrogen that your body's still producing. So what we're usually seeing is no estrogen, no progesterone, and usually low testosterone as well. The perimenopause is slightly different, because obviously you're still having periods. So we would normally do bloods at day 21, and normally what we would see then is a very high level of estrogen and a very low level of progesterone. And then we go about fixing that, really. So, and then afterwards, we tend to do bloods just to check the levels, just to make sure that they're not too high, and obviously to keep an eye on things. But a lot of the management is around being a bit more intuitive and actually asking the patient how they're feeling, obviously. And blood tests are only just a marker and an assist to that. But the biggest thing is how they're feeling, obviously. And again, monitoring the blood tests, we look at levels, but everybody's level of where they feel best at is different. So again, it's very much a very mixed guide of how they're feeling, what I look at the blood tests about, and how I can help manage it best. So it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle, really.
Yeah, and look, the reality is, I know people might be listening and they're thinking, okay, Emma, this is all very well and good, but I'm not in a position where I can go and see a specialist and get these detailed blood tests. So if someone's listening to this and they're struggling, how do you know that you're not just having a bad month, or you're not just under stress, which is causing you to feel that your maybe PMT or monthly symptoms are amplified? How might you know the difference between that and actually beginning perimenopause?
I mean, usually it's a multitude of things, as you know, most of us, when we hit our 40s, lots of things start to change. So stress has a big impact on the hormones. So being very stressed will affect how your body, your body is able to produce progesterone. Because if you're producing a lot of cortisol, which you do when you're stressed, then the body preferentially will produce that over rather than progesterone, because it has only a certain amount of substrate.
Oh, so it's almost like an either or for those two hormones.
If you're really heavily stressed, and there's something called the cortisol steel pathway, which is basically what happens is, the way I explain it to patients is, all the hormones are made from cholesterol, and the body has obviously a finite amount of cholesterol to use. So if your body's really pushing out the cortisol, and it is a choice, very simply, your body has a fight or flight survival choice or a do I have sex choice, then the body has to obviously, the simpler way that I explain it to patients and it works really well, so the body has to
do
say,
do I run or do I lie down?
Yeah, exactly. Do I live or do I, yeah, so it's a preferential of what we do. So, and the body produces cortisol. So then poor old progesterone gets put on the back burner.
Okay.
So that estrogen dominant picture that we talked about earlier that happens naturally in the menopause or in the perimenopause anyway, becomes even more exacerbated and even more of an imbalance. So then women who are perimenopausal and very, very stressed will have even worse symptoms. So obviously that's a big part of my job when I see them, is actually looking at how can I help with their stress, how can I help them manage that, rather than just say, here's some progesterone.
Oh, okay. So you could be beginning to show the symptoms, but if you're stressed anyway, and then you get stressed about how you're feeling as well,
obviously
you could actually be making
matters worse. It's a bit of a vicious circle.
So it is a bit more holistic. It's a bit more, okay, well, obviously, say you're a 40-something-year-old woman listening to this. Actually, part of your hormone treatment could be stress management.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, a big part of this is very much the GP work that I did, is looking at the bigger picture and looking at holistically why what is going on, and not just, I don't just do hormones. It's very much a big part of my job is the psychology, and a big interest of mine is what else is going on and the emotional concept context of what's happening. And usually when you know, unfortunately the menopause, perimenopause, kids are in the middle of exams or leaving home, parents, elderly parents are getting sick, marriages are starting to, you know, fray a little bit at the core, and obviously the hormone issues don't help. So, you know, it's actually, I mean, the consult is not just about the hormones, and I'd be doing the patient a disservice just to say, oh, here's some hormones, because it's not just the, you know, it's very much the functional medicine approach that I use, is that we look at all aspects and obviously looking at
that could be papering over the cracks. It's interesting. It's very tempting when I did the episode on thyroid. I really wanted a sluggish thyroid because I was hoping that a bit of thyroxine would get me into a size 27 gene. But I don't have a sluggish thyroid. And actually, in a way, it's good. But there is that thing of, if you get a confirmation from a blood test and then something that you can take, it's kind of tick, box, tick. But actually, it sounds like even with the hormones and with the other things you can do, like the stress management, it really is about trying it, seeing how it works, seeing if you can improve it, tweaking it here, there, and everywhere. It's a course, not a...
Yeah, it's very much a journey rather than a
destination.
So looking at, and again, the thyroid, lots of people come, obviously weight's a big issue for women, and, and lots of people come thinking, oh, it's my thyroid, and can you give me some thyroid? The female hormones and the thyroid work very closely together as well. So sometimes just assisting the female hormones, thyroid goes off at that time of life as well. But sometimes it's a matter of fixing something and then just seeing how the body reacts to it, because quite often it'll quite happily fix itself if you just give it the right tools. So often giving them some progesterone will help the weight loss, and it'll also help the thyroid to work better as well. And again, massively stress. I see a lot of women who are highly, highly stressed, who are trying to lose weight, who go and kill themselves at the gym and knock themselves out in a treadmill and do exercise until they're nearly sick. And that's probably the worst thing they can do if they're heavily stressed, because their cortisol is then just going to be even more driven, and they're going to hold on to fat and store fat, because that's what cortisol does.
Yeah. Do you believe in adrenal fatigue?
I do. I could tell you lots about adrenal fatigue. I've suffered my own adrenal fatigue, and it's not a nice place to be. So yeah, it's one of my big areas that I look at. And I think it's becoming an epidemic, to be honest, in this society, and probably will become even bigger with the mobile phone use and just the adrenaline kicks that we all get and the dopamine release from just using social media and those type of things, and just the pressure that we are all under as human beings.
So if you're highly stressed and your hormones are beginning to fluctuate because you're in perimenopause, which is a long-term place, right? Perimenopause isn't. How long does perimenopause last?
It can last up to 10 years, so it can start 40s. I mean, I'm seeing it a lot earlier because of stress now too, but it can.
Wait,
I mean,
so stress could be triggering it earlier?
I think it can. I think it's starting to, because of the progesterone effect, it can start those sort of estrogen dominant pictures and start to give you a little bit of a perimenopausal earlier picture now. So I do think there's a big impact on that. But yeah, stress is massive. I had a lady on the phone the other day, and that was, you know, you could just, she lives abroad, and you could just palpably hear her stress on the phone, you know, and she was wanting all these medications to fix her, and I actually had to just be really, in a nice way, be really, you know,
direct
and say, look, you are on the she's basically on the verge of burnout, and I just had to be very gently say, look, we really need to address your lifestyle issues or you're going to fall. The problem is, until you hit that brick wall, you don't know what it's like. And I know you've suffered from your own issues. So, but some people will continue to, and I did it, I continued to push and push and push and push until you fall over the edge. And then you go, I think I have to do something now about this.
I think I'm going to have to take a week off.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what we're all like. We do. I was talking to somebody about it the other day, and we're just laughing, saying, you know, we all think we're superhuman, which we do, that we can just continue running on empty and run a million miles an hour and juggle 27 balls in the air. Yeah. And then, unfortunately, the body can only do so much until it... And it starts to give you signs, but it's one of my big things. I think I spoke to you about setting up the retreats and stuff, about, you know, listening to your body and actually getting in there before, you know, what I was to say... Someone sent me this, something about listen to your body when it whispers so you don't have to hear it when it screams, which I thought was really lovely. Because, yeah, it tells you what you want to know, but we are all so busy doing what we're doing that we don't actually listen to the signs of, you know, yeah, my gut's playing up, or, you know, I'm really fatigued or really tired. We just keep pushing through, or add in a bit more caffeine, or... gets on.
Don't judge me, Elaine.
Oh, don't. Listen. I'm a caffeine addict as well. So,
but okay, yeah. There's a lot to unpick there, because I do think stress plays in a really vital part in the hormone story.
Yeah, massively.
Right. So, can we talk about really specifically, and this is where I get a bit lost, so if you see me drawing pictures,
okay.
Although, listeners, Elaine has very helpfully got a graph in front of me, which has actually got a picture of the answer to my question, which is basically what happens during the menstrual cycle, week by week, and then how does that change when you go into perimenopause? Because I guess that graph looks different. Like, the spikes aren't as high, or the lows aren't as low, or...
I mean, it's very difficult to give you a fixed schedule of what happens in the perimenopause. Obviously, you have your menstrual cycle, where your estrogen and progesterone rise at different times in the menstrual cycle. Mid-cycle, you usually have a spike of estrogen. Slightly later, then you'll have a spike of progesterone. So mid-cycle is where you have ovulation, when the estrogen is at its height.
Is a prolonged period of a lot of estrogen bad?
Estrogen has got a bit of bad press in the past, and there's been lots of. I mean, we'll talk about the HRT thing in a bit, and about the risks from that. But estrogen has got lots of very positive effects. Too much estrogen causes increase in cell growth, so it can cause cancers if it's very high over long periods of time. But estrogen is obviously a very positive hormone. Like anything else, it's getting the balance right. And
how would you know if you had high estrogen? Would you know?
Most women who have high estrogen feel pretty good. They're usually the more better skin, better hair, gives you a lot of blooming estrogen effects. But it also will, usually those women are a bit more sort of hippie, sort of estrogen dominant, has that sort of more sort of heavy around the hips look. So.
Okay.
They tend to gain weight a bit easier as well. So estrogen dominance tends to be, and the women who sort of struggle a bit to lose weight can be because of estrogen dominance, not just the thyroid. So, and again, estrogen dominance tends to be those women who have worse PMT and stuff as well. So that are a couple of the signs that you would sort of make you start to think that you've got estrogen dominance. or high estrogen. The other thing is things like fibroids is usually linked with estrogen dominance, endometriosis, PCOS can be a bit of an estrogen dominant picture as well. So
why is testosterone dominant?
It's testosterone as well, but it can be that you can get a little bit of estrogen dominance as well. So yeah, those are a couple of the diagnoses that might link into estrogen dominance.
I just think it's interesting for somebody who's listening to this, you might be feeling some changes. And to understand maybe if it is a hormone change. I came in here and said I've had a low-level headache for 3 days, and you said it's because your estrogen's dropped.
Yeah. So prior to your period, your estrogen and progesterone both drop, and most women who suffer from headaches or migraines, that tends to happen. And as I say, again, in the perimenopause, a lot of women who suffer from migraines because of the fluctuating estrogen that happens in the perimenopause before it drops completely, is they get worsening headaches, and it's quite hard to control because of we don't know what the estrogen's doing. And some women, they have normal periods right up until the menopause, and then it just stops. And then some other women, it's fluctuating. So it's a very hard thing to predict how anybody's going to go into their menopause.
Because everyone's unique and different and wonderful. So everyone's hormones are unique and different and wonderful and will affect them differently.
Hence why the sort of more bespoke treatments that we talked about earlier are more beneficial. But again, for women who can't afford to come to a clinic where they're doing the sort of bespoke bioidentical hormones, there are things your GP can do to help. There are natural estrogens and natural progesterones. Obviously, it's not as tailor-made, but there's been a lot on the media recently about menopause, and a lot of GPs are now a bit more clued in. I think GPs have got a lot of bad press about, but menopause is one of those things that up until the last few years, HRT was a no-no because there was so much bad press about it. Now they've sort of turned it over on its head and said that actually hormones are really beneficial and the benefits outweigh the risk. And all the research that was done, all the risks about cancer were done on conventional HRT, so a lot of the NHS doctors are now switching over to a more bioidentical approach. But there's always going to be a bit of controversy. I mean, this bioidentical hormone stuff is relatively new, and I know a lot of GPs are a bit, whether they just don't know about it or they're off about it, but they can prescribe it on the NHS. As I say, it's just not as tailor-made, and I think with time, hopefully this will become more mainstream and cheaper, but at the minute, unfortunately, it's not.
And just for the week, because obviously the international audience, we have an international audience on the show. So obviously we don't know what the availability is in other territories, but just to sort of flag up that it might be available where you are, or you might have to ask.
We actually see a lot of international patients at the clinic who either fly over or do Skype consults with us. So I think it's becoming more mainstream, and there are more doctors being trained up on it. So hopefully with time it will be available to all. But there are ways and means, if you really need to get it, that you can have a consult. And I think that's one of the, you know, I think there's a lot of, I just did a menopause talk in Cheltenham over the weekend, and there's a lot more interest in this. People are becoming much more aware, and you can find the info if you want to find it, and there's help available.
And when you speak to women, maybe not in clinic, because obviously that's a personal consultation and there's also confidentiality, but when you go and do those sorts of talks, what are the questions that people are asking? What information is it that they're not finding out there?
Well, basically the information is all out there, but I think it's easier when you have someone to ask the questions to. And I mean, there always is a lot of interest around hormones, and a lot of people are on conventional treatment but just don't feel quite right. And I think that's where the bioidentical comes in, because they don't, I think it's the understanding that they're not on a natural progesterone can sometimes just turn the corner for them. So they're on HRT, their symptoms have gone, they've no hot flushes anymore, but they just don't feel themselves. The mood's just not quite right, and there's just something missing. And I think that's where the bioidenticals make a difference, in that they're direct fit. So we should hopefully get you back. And the way I say to my patients is actually, for the first time in your life, you've got a balanced hormone profile for long term. So you actually should be at your best rather than if we can get it right, which we can.
I know everyone's levels might be different, but is there an optimum ratio?
The ratio of estrogen and progesterone, we try to keep between 10 and 20 to 1. But the levels, again, it's a bit of a... It's tweaking them up and down according to the patient. So I don't try not to get my levels too high for estrogen. So I don't want them to go above 400. But again, it's a very debatable subject. So some women come in and go, they feel much better at higher levels. Obviously, there's a little bit more risk having the levels higher. But, you know, it's all about, for me, quality of life rather than prolonging life just for a small risk that something untoward might happen if I give them a bit more estrogen. So as long as I educate them and they're aware and they're happy, then I think that's my job done. I think it's all about the patient, and we as doctors should be there to guide them rather than say, this is what's right and this is what's wrong. This is your, you know, the way when I give the hormones, I say, look, this is the dose I'm giving you. It's your body. You know, you will know better than I do. I can guide you, but you will know better when it's right for you. So,
I want to, obviously, for the listeners, I think it would be nice for anyone who's listening to this who might be, and you use the expression, who don't feel right, I would give them the comfort that they might not be going mad. They might not be wrong. Actually, that is probably a symptom in and of itself of I just don't feel right.
Yeah. It's back to listening to your body. And if you feel, you know, it was the biggest thing when I worked as a GP was, you know, the patient always knows better than you do. And if they come in and there is always something there, and it might not be physical, but there's always something. So go and talk to somebody, go to your GP. If you don't get the right GP and they're not sympathetic, find another one. If, you know, there's menopause clinics opening up as well on the NHS. So if you can't afford to go down the bioidentical route, which I think most people can, it is expensive to do the different blood tests, but there are ways and means to get around that. And actually, longer term, you know, a lot of people are paying a lot of money for different cosmetic things, that this hormones are really vitally important.
What other symptoms are there? We've talked about the different levels, but what other things might happen? Like, will your hair density be affected? Would your skin be affected beyond the normal signs of aging? Or would you see a sudden acceleration in the signs of aging, or skin elasticity or things like that? Is there, you know, as you say, I've often heard my mum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Talk about getting to a certain age and your waist goes.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Are they all... Sorry, listen, I've squeaked my chair.
They're all...
Are they all real?
They're all real. I mean, there's a big movement for a lot of the anti-aging doctors or aesthetic doctors are now training up on hormones, because the only reason that we age is because our hormones drop. So people start to age late 30s, start to develop wrinkles, and that's when the hormones start to fluctuate. So there's a big movement now, obviously, to fix the hormones, and that should hopefully prevent aging as well.
So if you keep your... In theory, if you were to keep, as your friend said about do your optimal levels in your early 30s, if you were to keep your hormones at that level by medical intervention...
That and obviously other lifestyle things that you would do.
Could extend your life.
It could. Well, it'll help you to maintain your youthful looks, which it should help you. And obviously, help extend your life. So... dropping your hormones means that all those symptoms that you described. So skin wrinkling, your hair starts to dry. Some women experience hair loss.
Would that be a particular type of hair loss? Like, is it female pattern baldness, or is it like the little alopecia? Like, how would it manifest?
In different women, it depends on the woman, but just more just general hair loss, just thinner, drier hair. Obviously, thickening of the waist as the metabolic rate slows down, as the hormone drops. So not being able to lose weight that way they used to, struggling to maintain their muscle, which is usually sign of testosterone drop as well. Hot flushes, obviously, sleeplessness, more anxiety, brain fog's a big one as well for a lot of women who just get forgetful, forget where they're putting things, have to write things
down. What's the difference between brain fog and just being busy and being overwhelmed and just forgetting where you put your keys?
Well, it's trying to work out which is which, obviously. Mm. There's a mixture of both, but and obviously I get a lot of patients coming and going, oh, I'm just getting old, that's what it is, but that's only because your hormones have dropped as well, right. You know, so obviously we look at the stress factors, and obviously if you're doing too many things and you've too much stuff in your head, you're going to be more forgetful. So, but also the hormones will have an impact on that as well. So there's a big link now between hormones and dementia as well. So losing your hormones has a big impact on dementia and forgetfulness and memory loss. So the very positive effects of being on bioidentical hormones is prevention of Alzheimer's, keeping your bone density, quality of life factors, obviously. And then most women don't develop cardiovascular disease until they hit the menopause. So being on hormones will obviously help prevent cardiovascular disease as well. So there's lots of positives.
So here's the thing. When I was coming to this podcast today, I felt a real burden to really understand it, because a lot of people have written into this show and have asked very specific questions about menopause, perimenopause, and there's been a tone of distress. There really has. And confusion isn't even the right word. I would say actually distress and frustration. And the thing that sort of almost, and I'm chuckling and it isn't funny, is that actually it just balance your hormones.
Yeah.
That it can be as simple as that. It's obviously how one can do that based on financial ability to be able to invest in it, or to arm themselves with the right questions to speak to a GP.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, I mean, I worked in GP for many years, and it's a hard job, and it's really, you know, GPs have limited time to deal with, but, you know, go armed with your questions and go...
What is a good question to ask a GP? If you go in and all you think you've got is, I just don't feel right, and I'm 44, and I shouldn't be having the menopause yet, because doesn't that happen when you're 50? What are the right things to be asking?
Well, basically just to give your symptoms as much as possible. If you can come armed with as much information, you've got to remember GPs have got 10 minutes to see a patient, write up their notes, diagnose, prescribe, as well as the million other things that are going on in the background that they're doing. So it's a very stressful job for them. So if you can come in armed with as much information as possible, bring a list of your symptoms. If you've got internet things that you've looked up and that you think it might be, then bring that with you as well. And come informed, and they will try to help you as much as possible. That is their job. And they are, you know, most GPs are really, really good at what they do and work really hard, and they're doing their best to help their patients. So all you can do is help them to help you, and they will hopefully be able to. If they aren't clued in on the menopause, maybe you're seeing a male doctor who doesn't see a lot of it, then ask to see the specialist female who looks after the menopause. There's menopause clinics, again, that you can get referred to if you're really symptomatic. But as I say, come armed with as much information as possible, and, you know, they will do their best to assist you.
Yeah. I'm actually looking in the Facebook group, because there have been a few questions and interest. Maybe we can just go through them.
Yeah.
Yes, I would love to know what to... This is great. I would love to know what to expect as I approach menopause.
Yeah, well, that's a $60 million question. As I say, it differs from everybody, but the symptoms that we talked about. So once you hit 40s, hormones start to change. you may start to feel a bit more tired, lethargic, things are a bit more of a struggle, mood changes, sleep changes, maybe weight changes. Again, the biggest thing you can do is the lifestyle thing. So sleep well, very basic things, sleep well, good diet. You become a little bit more insulin resistant as you hit the menopause as well. So watching your weight with good fats, good proteins, sort of minimizing the bad carbs, but also not going on extreme diets or doing anything erratic because your body is already under a lot of stress.
Is it a little bit like all the stuff you've been able to get away with, if you have been someone who's been able to get away with it, catches up with you?
Yeah.
Is it basically that?
It's sort of that way. And you just sort of, your body starts to struggle a bit because the hormones aren't there to assist it anymore. So your body starts to just be a bit more, you know, you get tireder when you're exercising and things just aren't as easy as they were in your 20s.
And it's natural, like it's a natural process. So basically it's almost like, and forgive this analogy because it is a bit weak, but you are a vehicle and you have a petrol tank and your petrol tank is your hormones and you get to a certain point. And it's a case of when you do fill that tank, you do it via bioidentical hormones if that's your choice. What if somebody's thinking, actually, I don't think it's appropriate to fill up that tank? The course of nature is that that tank naturally empties.
Well, this is a question I get asked a lot and have done a lot of deliberate. And we talked about it at the weekend when I did the talk. There's lots of questions around this. I think the reason why a lot of women are against it, obviously, there's a lot of scaremongering with the women's health study. It was done years and years ago that said that that hormones increase your risk of cancer. That was conventional HRT with the unnatural progesterones. But there's a lot more positives about the bioidenticals now, but some women do want to just age naturally, as they call it. And again, we can assist them with diet, lifestyle, exercise, all those things that can help. And some women do tend to be okay, but they aren't optimal, and my thing is all about quality rather than quantity,
right.
As I said.
Quality of life, yeah.
And if I can make them feel the best, then I think we should. Obviously, again, there's the affordability and other different factors that come into that. But I think we are living a lot longer now than we ever were. I think a lot of our ancestors didn't live much beyond their menopause, or if they were, they weren't functioning in high-powered jobs and trying to do what we are having to do now in our 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
A lot of the women I see are corporate women who are running businesses. They can't afford to have brain fog and be forgetting things and being in meetings and having hot flushes and just getting distressed and crying all the time. So there's a lot of different factors that come into that. Obviously, if your lifestyle's different and you can manage your hormones with, there are other ways and means of trying to manage your symptoms, but there are choices. And I think, obviously, I'm here to guide the choices, but I think hormones, I think we, saying that we should be aging old, getting old gracefully and not being without hormones is fine, but it also, you know, I think we are living a lot longer now, and I think the benefits of living longer and having our brain and our wits about us and feeling well is very important. But again, it's a choice factor.
Very important. Is there a difference in what happens with your hormones when you, sorry, I'm scrolling through these questions because I just lost track of it. Is there a difference between what you might experience with menopause or perimenopause if you have or haven't had children?
Not that I've seen. It shouldn't make any difference, really, as to how you experience your menopause or perimenopause. Still go through the same drop in hormones, whether you've had kids or not. So, yeah, obviously, having kids comes with that added stress around the menopause, perimenopause, but I don't see that there's a link, not that I'm aware of.
Is there a link between your hormone levels and your mental health?
Massively. I think there's a lot more information coming out now about the link between depression and anxiety and hormones. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, the hormones are a big impact on your mental health.
Could that be, and I'm sorry to interject at this point, but I have spoken a lot to friends recently who have teenage kids, and they are confiding in me that their children are experiencing anxiety and depression, and not just experiencing it, but diagnosed, and there might be a special dispensation at their school because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I must admit, I'm quite surprised, and I just thought, oh gosh, well maybe when I was at school, I would have been one of those kids. Because if somebody had actually sat me down, they would have identified the anxiety and depression that I didn't discover till my late 30s. But then a part of it, I'm wondering, on such a big scale, is it that we're just diagnosing it earlier and there's a bigger frequency than we realised? Or is it because children's lifestyle, which is, you know, the exams that kids have to do now is so, they're so many and varied, mm-hmm. and there's stress around that, there's stress around their mobile phones. Could the stress be impacting their progesterone?
I think so.
At a young age.
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of women of all different ages, and I think I see men at the clinic as well with testosterone issues, and I think there probably is a link between, you know, our environment, the stress that we're under, chemicals in our food, and hormone levels in kids. So things like testosterone level in young men. I think it's something that I watched an American webinar about a year ago, actually, and it was one of those things. I used to see a lot of anxiety and depression in a lot of teenagers when I was doing GP, and it was never a subject that it probably wasn't something that we could look at as GPs, but I think it's something that I definitely be much more aware of now in measuring things like testosterone levels in young men who are suffering from depression, and also check in cyclical hormone changes in young women as well. Certainly around the time of their period and premenstrually, and if they're having a lot of stress, they're still under the same cortisol steel that we talked about earlier that women have in their menopause. They're still going to be impacted. So if their progesterone is dropping, then they're going to be more anxious. So it's again looking at all the different factors, their lifestyle, their stress, their hormones, their eating habits, their mobile phone use, their social media use, all the different things that could be contributing to their anxiety. Gut health as well is another big thing that is massively linked to your brain. So it's, again, looking at a functional medicine lifestyle approach, and that one thing doesn't just fix it. We have to see what the big picture is and actually listen and hear the story of what's going on in their lives.
What about yams?
What about yams?
Well, because we've all seen Sex and the City 2, let's face it, listeners, we all sat through it. But Samantha Jones was massaging yams into herself. And that, I mean, I've heard that a lot. Is that... Obviously, you don't prescribe that.
Well, actually, the base of our natural hormones is wild Mexican yam. So a lot of the natural component, obviously, they are bioidentical. They're not natural in that they're synthetically made in a specialist pharmacy, but they're actually to obviously preserve them and keep them and make sure that they're able to be absorbed into the body correctly. They have to be made into a certain consistency. But their baseline is a natural substance like yams, which has got natural progesterone in it. So there's lots of online companies that provide similar type progesterone creams that you can buy over the counter. Some women find that they help somewhat, so it's worth giving a try. And obviously, if it's not working completely right for you, or you're still struggling, then you can go delve down the other route. But as I say, there's lots of stuff out there that women can try that's available and accessible for if you can't make a clinic. So
So there are things that don't have to be prescribed by a doctor.
They're not, I mean, obviously they're not properly monitored, and I don't know an awful
Listeners,
lot about
she's inserting a disclaimer.
I don't know much about them, but they're, you know, I have women who come and say it helped for a bit, and then obviously if their symptoms got really, you know, obviously it's probably at a very low dose, so then when things got deteriorated or they're entered further into the menopause, then they need further assistance.
But that's really good to know, because if you try it, if you think, well, I think I'm having these symptoms, I might give this yam cream a try, and if you see an improvement, then actually you know that maybe an investment in
going to a clinic. Exactly.
Okay, right. I feel cheered by that.
Yeah, so I think there's lots of options out there, and as I say, there's lots of, luckily, you know, Much as I diss social media and the internet, I use it a lot for information, and it's been a godsend for finding out stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of positives around it as long as we keep it under control, I think.
Yeah. Was there anything you can do? There's a great question here in the group. Basically, how to prepare for the menopause. And I think, obviously, we've discussed, like, lifestyle changes are hugely important. What about nutrition? Are there any foods you should cut out?
Nutrition is... a bit of anybody who's sort of hitting, you know, their perimenopause, menopause, it's all about getting the sugar balance right as well. So you become a lot more insulin resistant. You become a bit like PMT. You crave sugars a lot because your body, metabolism of the hormones means that your lack of hormones means you crave sugar. So to try and balance your hormones best is to obviously try and override that as much as you can, which is... making sure that your sugar's balanced by having good proteins and fats at every meal, so that your blood sugar level doesn't drop. So not snacking on chocolate and having spikes of blood sugar. So sort of a more low GI approach. I'm not an advocate of any sort of strict diets, and I know there's lots of keto diets out there and fasting. Anybody with hormonal issues need to probably take guidance from either a nutritionist or a doctor before they start anything extreme.
The ketogenic diet's a very sensitive subject on this podcast.
Yeah, and it's the ketogenic diet is actually a medical diet that was designed for people who are epileptic, have brain disorders, for cancer, for lots of other different things. It works really well for that. I don't believe it's a sustainable diet long term for anybody.
Well, this is the thing. I feel like, and I always blame Madonna, and it's very unfair to blame Madonna because she's not the reason, but I do feel that when she... when she did the Blonde Ambition tour and she turned up on stage in absolutely incredible shape, it changed, or it started a conversation in the press about how one trains, how one exercises, that for me personally made us start looking at it in a way, looking at exercise in a way that we hadn't before. And there's all this high performance, almost like athletic level intervention that we're doing.
Yeah.
Not even the bodybuilding was always a little bit, you know, it was always off to the side and it was extreme and everyone kind of understood what it was about. But I think if you look at the gym gear we can buy, which is crazy NASA tested fabrics, like, really don't need that. £6 pair of leggings do the same job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just think it's that thing of we suddenly start treating ourselves like we are Olympic athletes or we are elite astronauts, whatever it might be. Anyway, it's not Madonna's fault, but it's just things like these, as you say, unsustainable diets.
Yeah,
we put so much pressure on ourselves, but actually, realistically, we are not elite athletes.
Yeah.
And we should be allowed to have some ciabatta and olive oil and balsamic vinegar or something before. Crazy example, it's a tangent.
No,
I
think you're right about the extremes. I mean, I it scares me a bit. You know, with the amount of people who are on these extreme diets and cutting their body fat down to nothing, women are designed to have body fat. They're designed to, they need that to have hormones. So a lot of women who are anorexic or training too hard or really low body weight will stop their periods. And it's the body's sign of saying that there's something not quite right. It doesn't got, it hasn't got enough fuel to function properly as a woman. So, you know, you know, all the gyms, you see these young girls who are, it's basically a glorified eating disorder, and their hormones will eventually come back to haunt them and there'll be problems. And unfortunately, I've seen quite a lot of it in my time, and it's not fun. And it's not about appearance, it's about how you feel and how you accept yourself and self-esteem, and that should be addressed, not these, you know, women aren't designed to have six packs. I'm sorry, but we're not. And, you know, we're not designed to see our muscles, you know, and it's not, I don't think it's natural and I don't think it's attractive. But then that's my opinion. And I also know the effects of what it has on their system as well in the long term. If they've, you know, we need fat to survive.
The theme I'm getting as well from this conversation is just be easy on yourself.
Yeah. Massively. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's from my own personal experience, from seeing patients and from, you know, life.
Is that a shift? So if somebody comes into you and they say, Elaine, I don't feel myself, something's not quite right, I'm sure it's my hormones, you do the tests and you confirm that there is an imbalance, you begin to treat them. When they come in, maybe however many weeks or months later, depending on what their particular program is, do you see a physical change, like an energy shift?
Yeah, I mean...
attitude shift.
Yeah, I mean, it massively changed people. I mean, that's what I love so much about this job. I mean, I love doing my GP work, but this is life-changing for people that they come back and they, you know, they feel like you've given them your life back and you go, and I've just given you some hormones. It's not, you know, it's really simple, but it's really effective. And, you know, you see the spark back in their eyes. You see them, you know, the big thing that people come to me with, which is, you know, I feel like I just have lost myself. That's the one theme that comes up, is I feel like I'm not myself anymore, and I don't know where I've gone, and I can't find myself. I can't get back to there. And you give them some hormones and they just, it's just beautiful. It's lovely. And as I say, it's lovely to see. And it's really, for anybody out there who's struggling, there is help. And, you know, there's lots of stuff that can be done. And obviously, again, it's not all just the hormones. There are other things that are going on in their lives that we can help you with. But hormones have a big impact on how you're feeling and how you manage those other things. So
it's hormones, it's lifestyle, and it's really that stress, cortisol steel. It's really addressing stress.
Yeah, massively.
That should maybe... And also, dare I say, the stress management is potentially the least expensive approach to begin with, of just managing the stress.
Well, it's the easiest thing to do. And as I said about that lady that I spoke to the other day, you know, I can tweak her hormones around forever, and I have done. But if she doesn't change those other lifestyle things, then that progesterone's just going to keep getting used up to make cortisol. And I'm actually not helping her if I don't speak to her about those other stuff, the other things. And it's up to, you know, it's obviously... It's again then up to you what you do about it. But, and some people wait until they hit the brick wall, like I did, and sometimes we have to do that. We have to hit rock bottom before we start to make our way back. But that is what we as doctors should be there to see the signs and hopefully try to help them and point them in the right direction if they can't do it on their own, to people who can. You know, our NHS, God love it, is failing miserably at trying to support everybody who is struggling with mental health issues. And a lot of the stuff on, you know, we will have to end up paying for, but there is help out there. And yeah, it's about getting the right guidance.
And as somebody who allowed it to get to a bad point, you just said, I guess you would say, please don't do that.
Well, that's my big thing. I mean, I set up a new company doing retreats and trying to get people in, you know, to my ethos is, you know, don't go down the bad roads I went down, you know, all the dead end paths. And, you know, hopefully somebody like myself, who have been through a lot of stuff and also have the medical experience, that I can guide you to down the right way, or hopefully try and help you at least as much as possible to go down the right path, and obviously help balance hormones and look at nutrition and look at that whole holistic picture. Because it's not pleasant when you hit that rock bottom and that bad patch, and it takes a while to get out. Once, especially when you hit the sort of end stage of adrenal fatigue, it can take a couple of years to come back out the other end. And you know what, you said earlier is, be gentle, have patience with yourself. You've only got one body. And you know, we're all so hard on ourselves. You know, we do, you know, we talk to ourselves the way we would talk to our worst enemy, you know. And the one thing that I have learned over the past couple of years is just that, you know, quality of life, you know, spending time in nature, sleeping better, being around good people who are not toxic to your energy, and being very mindful of what and who you spend your time with is as important as all the drugs and all the hormones and all the medical interventions, is the simple things. Sleep, diet, having some time for yourself, which I never was able to do, which I can actually do now for the first time in my life. And just
me either. I used to, if I wasn't with other people, I'd just go on standby like a television, just literally wait until I could be with people again. And now I love my alone time.
Yeah, and walking in nature and being just, I mean, we've got some beautiful weather now. I was out for a walk yesterday. Just, there's so much out there that, you know, that people are so busy in their own heads and, you know, busy working that they're missing out on life. I think we all are, you know, we're living in a very stressful world now, and I think people are beginning to suffer because of that, but also people are becoming more aware. So I think there's a lot of positives coming out of the negatives.
Yeah, I got in a taxi last night. I hosted an event about 9 o'clock, 9:10, central London, got into a taxi, and there was just this beautiful light.
Yeah.
You know, because it's May and the light was just incredible and every single building looks slightly magical. And I said, oh gosh, doesn't London look beautiful? And the driver just went, got me eyes on the road.
Her guy had probably been working for 24 hours.
No, I know. And I just thought, yeah, that's the difference. Sometimes just looking up and just going, just taking a bit of a deep breath. And I know that sounds a bit woolly. You might be thinking, Emma, I'm in the middle of a hot flash. Just get me the bioidentical hormones. But it is part of it, isn't it? It's just kind of like elevating, relaxing, easing, and being kind to yourself. I get messages from people all the time about this. And what I hear in those emails and in those DMs is, as I said, distress.
Yeah.
And we're load-bearing animals, us women.
Yeah.
And I know there are men who listen. We love you too. Men load-bear too. But as you say, you can hit rock bottom. But then you're going to need to recover. So be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Elaine's standing there with the yellow tabard on going, wrong way, go down there.
It's the self-care stuff. I mean, I think that's the big thing for women. And I mean, I think men are suffering a lot too, actually. Mm. I mean, I think women actually, we're a bit more vocal about our problems and we actually share and we actually get support from our female friends. I see a lot of men who struggle, who probably the only person they speak to about their stuff is me. And that scares me. I think there's a lot of men who are struggling a lot more than women are.
Is the menopause real then?
Yeah, massively. Okay. So I do see a lot of men with low testosterone as well. And again, I think that will be the big thing in the future as well. But I mean, the same thing applies to the men, you know, the stress thing as well, the diet thing. Obviously, they're not as hormonally driven as women, so they don't fall off the cliff edge the way we do when we hit the menopause. Their testosterone is a more gradual decline, so they tend to slip through a wee bit. Yeah. And then they're presenting more now because there's a bit more social awareness of it, but I think a lot of men are struggling, and hopefully if there's men listening out there as well, that there is help for them as well. They tend to have a very gradual decline in testosterone, so it's not acute like women, and they don't develop hot flushes, but it's tiredness, fatigue, anxiety, depression, loss of confidence.
And that's the testosterone.
That's testosterone as well.
Decreasing.
Yeah. And again, we give women have testosterone as well, and low testosterone women can be a big factor. So we do prescribe testosterone as well. But I say, I think, I know we've talked mostly about the women's stuff, but men do struggle as well. And it's...
Well, listeners, you know I create the shows that you want, so if there are enough listeners out there who want an episode on the menopause, we can absolutely get Elaine back. Elaine, thank you so much. It's such a convoluted subject.
Yeah, it is. It's a complicated subject, but actually, I mean, I try to keep it simple and explain as much as possible to the patients. And obviously, you know, hopefully you'll be able to give my the people can contact if there's anything they really want to know.
But I think as complicated as hormones are to understand what each and every one does, because I'm going to be honest, I've forgotten a little bit about what estrogen does that you explained at the beginning. I think I'll remember if you don't give me an exam. But I mean even though the subject matter itself is quite complicated, the paths to actually feel more like yourself again are actually simpler than you might think.
I think it's not that important to know what the hormones do. It's important to know that they have a massive impact on your mental well-being, your physical well-being, and just how you're feeling. So, you know, obviously I should know what they do, but it's not that important that you obviously know that they're part of your reproductive system and that they have a big impact on your health. And as I say, most women know when there's something wrong, and it's their hormones, you know.
And if you go to a doctor, whether it's a GP or whoever, and you say, I think my hormones are out of whack, that's a valid thing to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think if you're feeling unwell, it's valid to go and ask for help. And as I said to you before, you know, if you don't get the right help, then, you know, ask for someone else. Mm. Or, you know, hopefully there's lots of support in it. There's lots of menopause cafes out there now. There's lots of support and women who are setting up things to support women going through the menopause that are not...
And maybe you could share those links with me and I can put them in the show notes.
Certainly can.
So people can find
them. Yeah, absolutely.
Elaine, thank you so much. Listeners, obviously the links to Elaine, the clinic, everything will be in the show notes, which you'll find wherever you're streaming and downloading this episode. And I'm sure we'll get you back. Maybe
hopefully.
We'll do some listener questions. But Elaine, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Before you go, just a reminder that if you do want to get in touch with me, it couldn't be easier. Email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com or DM me on social media where I'm at Emma Guns. You can also join the closed Facebook group and have a conversation with me and other listeners simply by clicking the link in the show notes, which can be found wherever you are streaming and downloading this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you on the next one.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.